Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. So good to be with you today. And I hope to see you this coming Thursday evening for our first event, Film Week and Chill. It's a chance for us looking at movies that are just fun, relaxing, pleasurable events to talk about some of those great movies. The first one I chose, Disney Pixar's The Incredibles. The director of the film, Brad Bird, Michael Giacchino, who did the terrific score, will be with us. Our Film Week critics, Claudia Puig and Charles Solomon, also part of the program. It's coming up this Thursday at 6:30 p.m. It's a free event, and it's all done virtually, so you don't have to leave your house to attend. Just make sure you make a reservation right now so you get the link to the event. Visit kpecc.org/in-person, and I sure hope to see you this coming Thursday at 6:30 p.m. as Film Week and Chill launches our brand new film series on The Incredibles. Make sure you see the film if you need to have your memory refreshed on it or you've never seen the wonderful superhero film. It's available either on Disney Plus if you're a subscriber, or it's available for nominal cost at Amazon Prime Video. And maybe you've even got it on Blu-ray or DVD at home. Make sure you see the film and then join us as we talk about it together Thursday evening at 6:30. Well, as you just heard on NPR News, we have that huge 500,000 Americans whose lives have been lost to COVID-19. We passed that threshold this week. And in fact, this afternoon at 3 o'clock, President Biden will be speaking about the 500,000 American lives lost to the novel coronavirus. We'll be carrying the president's address live at 3 o'clock this afternoon, NPR coverage right here on KPCC. But with us to talk about this negative milestone, but some good news as well on COVID-19, is UCLA Fielding School of Public Health epidemiologist and professor of medicine, Dr. Timothy Brewer. Dr. Brewer, very good Monday morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Larry.
We heard Dr. Fauci say that we have not experienced anything like this in approximately a century when it comes to a public health disaster. You know, put this in context, please.
Sure. So to put it in context, in Los Angeles County, we've had just under 20,000 deaths. So we've had 19,885 deaths just in Los Angeles County from COVID-19. That's about what you would expect in a typical influenza season in the entire country. So in the space of time of the number of deaths we would expect to see in the entire United States from influenza, we've seen from COVID-19 just in Los Angeles County.
The good news is hospitalizations are down. The test positivity rate has dropped quite substantially. It appears that we have turned a major corner here. What do you think it is the reason behind that or reasons behind that?
So I suspect that we are starting to hit that magic herd immunity that everybody's been hoping for and talking about, a combination of the fact that vaccinations are now getting out there. So in California, we've given out about 7 million doses of vaccine, plus the fact that so many people have had this infection. So we've had only almost 30 million cases that we know of in the United States. The actual number is probably much higher than that. And so because of that, we're probably starting to get to a tipping point where it's harder for the virus to find susceptible populations to spread to.
And of course, the concern is that people will hear that, become lax when it comes to masking or social distancing, perhaps feel, well, it's okay for me to get together with family members, some of whom might have had it or other people might have been asymptomatic, but, you know, I'll trust I'm safe. And that we'll see the numbers tick back up again.
So that's a very real concern. You're exactly right, Larry. We can't let our guard down, even though this is wonderful news that we're in a much better situation now than we were a month ago. But we still need to remain vigilant. This virus is still in the community. It's still spreading. So here in Los Angeles, we had almost 1,500 new cases yesterday, just under 100 deaths. So it has not gone away, and we need to continue to do those public health measures that are so important.
If you have a question for Dr. Timothy Brewer, UCLA physician and epidemiologist, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. If much of what might be giving us herd immunity relates to undiagnosed, untested, asymptomatic exposure to COVID-19, is there a risk that once we get a few months further down the road, that the immunity that those folks who got it but maybe didn't even know they had it were able to receive starts eroding, and that they could be vulnerable down the road to getting COVID-19?
So that's certainly a possibility and a concern. So we do know that people with mild or asymptomatic infection, that their antibody levels do seem to wane over time. And so the question is, what happens to those memory B cells, and in particular the T cells? I think the exciting news is that what we've seen from preliminary studies is that if you vaccinate these individuals, you can get very substantial immune responses, even in people who didn't have previously detected antibodies but had been infected. So that suggests that there is this memory level to the immune system that's still present. And with boosting, particularly with vaccination, we may keep everybody at a level where they're protected from getting serious infection.
Do you advise that for people who have had COVID-19, that when they get vaccinated, they're only vaccinated once and allow that second dose they would have received to go to someone else?
No. So right now, you should continue to follow the CDC and FDA recommendations. So we may get to a point where you only need one vaccination. And actually, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is supposed to be reviewed by the FDA this week, and that is a one-dose vaccine, so hopefully that will become available too. But for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines for right now, though there's evidence to suggest that one dose may be sufficient, particularly in people who've been previously infected, the recommendation is still to get both doses of that vaccine.
We get a frequent question from listeners who've recently had or still have some symptoms of COVID-19. At what point is it right for them to get vaccinated? How much time does there need to be between the exposure or the cessation of symptoms?
So that's going to depend a little bit on exactly what kind of symptoms they're having. So the best thing to do is have that discussion with your healthcare provider, because that's going to be a person-by-person decision that's going to need to be made. So it's going to depend both on how serious those symptoms are and exactly which ones you are having. So reach out to your healthcare provider if you're due to get vaccinated and have that very important conversation.
What is the potential risk, either to efficacy or to health, in having the vaccine being given closely following exposure to COVID-19?
So probably no big risk if you're not symptomatic at all. So I'm sure there are people who have been vaccinated who were not aware they were infected, because we don't screen people for infection before they get vaccinated. So for most people, probably not a big risk at all. Remember, the vaccine does not contain the virus. It just contains a piece of code to make a protein. So there's no way that the vaccine can cause disease at all.
And I guess I wonder, though, for those who are in that category, they don't know that they're positive for COVID-19, they get vaccinated, then are tested later. We've had a number of these cases where people have tested positive for COVID-19 after being vaccinated. Is this pretty much exclusively a case of just someone who didn't know when they got the vaccine that they had COVID-19, and so being injected with the vaccine wouldn't undo that.
Correct. That's exactly right. So remember that about 40% of the cases, depending on the population, are asymptomatic. So they don't have any symptoms when they're infected with COVID-19. And because we're not screening people for SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, it's to be expected that some of those people are going to be infected at the time they got vaccinated or shortly thereafter. But at least the preliminary data suggests that that's not a problem at all.
Again, if you have questions for Dr. Timothy Brewer, UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, with your questions for Dr. Timothy Brewer. We have a question from Juan, who asks, Mickey asks in San Bernardino, do we know how long antibodies or T cells last in individuals depending on the degree of infection or symptoms?
So, Mickey, right now the levels of antibodies seem to be lasting at least 6 months out, and that's the longest amount of time that we have data for after the vaccine trials. In terms of people who have been infected, but not vaccinated, it varies depending on how sick they were. So in people who had asymptomatic or mild disease, those levels of antibodies can drop off after about 2 to 3 months. In people who've had severe disease, the levels of antibodies stay higher for a much longer period of time. And I have not seen good data yet on T cells, but that's a very important question.
Because we've had the virus with us for about a year, maybe more, it would seem we would, for people who have had serious cases and recovered, we would be able to study those people and look now a year out and see, do they still have robust immunity from their infection? But we haven't collected that data yet.
I'm sure somebody's working on those data, but I just haven't seen them yet. But the evidence so far is that particularly in people with severe disease, that their immune systems have continued to recognize the virus for up to 6 months. And I suspect you're right, Larry, we will start to see 9 month and 1 year data coming out hopefully soon.
Very good. Angela writes on the page, my spouse has COVID. We can't isolate. Our house is too small. I continue to test negative, haven't had any symptoms. How is it possible? If I had it in the past, wouldn't he have gotten infected at that point?
So not everybody who gets exposed gets infected. So the transmission rate is not 100%. And if you look at household contact studies, it varies anywhere from a low of about 14% of household contacts get infected to a high of about 55%. So hopefully you're doing everything right. You're washing your hands. You're trying to maintain your physical distancing, using separate utensils and towels and things like that. But it's entirely possible, particularly as you're partner gets farther out from the illness, that they're no longer contagious.
Let's talk with Molly in Highland Park. You're on Air Talk with Dr. Timothy Brewer of UCLA.
Hi. I wanted to find out, I'm a social worker in Los Angeles, and I have a compromised immune system, but I did get the first round of the Moderna vaccine. And I had some pretty severe symptoms 7 days out for at least a couple of weeks. And so I'm curious about people with compromised immune systems having that type of response and then receiving the second vaccine. I've thought a lot about skipping my second vaccine because of how intense those symptoms were from my first vaccine.
Molly, let me just ask you, were the symptoms pretty consistent over the course of that week plus? Was it like headache, general exhaustion that some people report after getting the vaccine?
No, my symptoms were actually more severe, Larry. I was not only experiencing that very severe migraine, but I was having brain fog, incredible fatigue, vertigo, joint pain. It really set me back.
Wow. Molly, great question. So sorry you went through that. Dr. Brewer?
So Molly, the best thing to do is to talk to your healthcare provider, either your primary care physician or potentially your primary care physician could refer you to someone like myself, an infectious disease specialist, to sit down and actually go through your symptoms and the timing. Try to understand, was this really due to the vaccine or not? It's possible it was. Possible there could have been some other infection or some other process going on. And then make the individual decision as to whether or not to get the second dose of the Moderna vaccine. But that would best be done working with someone who can work through what exactly happened to you and make sure that you're getting the best possible advice.
We have had many people, Dr. Brewer, with highly compromised immune systems who have been vaccinated to this point and have we had, to your knowledge, very many accounts like Molly's where it laid her low for such an extended period of time.
So there are serious side effects reported with both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine. Fortunately, they tend to be very uncommon at this point, relatively rare, anaphylactoid type reaction. So that's allergy-like reactions that can be quite severe. But for most people, even immunocompromised individuals, they tolerate the vaccines reasonably well. So immunocompromised people are at higher risk for severe disease from COVID-19. So if they have any concerns, they should talk with their healthcare providers. But the recommendation is to get vaccinated if they're able to do so.
Molly, we wish you all the best in that conversation with your physician. We'll continue with UCLA's Dr. Timothy Brewer. We'll take your calls, including Barbara in Palm Desert will be joining us. We're at 866-893-KPECC. We'll also talk about the threat to health with so many Americans who have foregone the kinds of typical cancer screening that they would do because of concerns about the spread of COVID-19 in visits to a doctor's office or to a laboratory. We'll talk with Dr. Brewer about that as we continue on Air Talk. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Joining us, Dr. Timothy Brewer from UCLA, the School of Public Health. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Dr. Brewer, noted epidemiologist and professor. He's served on the advisory boards of the World Health Organization, National Institutes of Health, U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and that's just the start. 866-893-5722. AirTalk page, kpcc.org. You can tweet at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. Barbara, in Palm Desert, your question for Dr. Brewer.
Yes, hello. My friends and I have all had 2 COVID shots, and now we've waited our 2 weeks. Are we safe to get together in small groups without being quite so concerned?
Oh, Barbara, congratulations. You feel like a little bit of a burden's been lifted?
Oh, my God, I'm giddy.
I bet. That's great news for you. Dr. Brewer?
So Barbara, what you're still going to want to do is follow the recommendations of your local county public health department. So if the Palm Desert County Public Health Department is allowing people to get together, then yes, that's okay to do. And you're going to want to do it however they advise. So that probably means still masking and maintaining your physical distancing. Remember, the vaccine is terrific at preventing serious disease and hospitalization, but we don't know if it prevents transmission or not. So you could possibly get infected and spread it to someone else, even though you've been vaccinated. So still follow the guidelines of your local county public health department for whether or not you can get together.
Boy, I know a lot of people who are in Barbara's position who are getting together in small groups en masse just because the odds that somehow you're going to pass it between you and then pass it to the outside world, they don't really see that as significant enough to counter the freedom of going en masse. You really think that that's justified?
Well, remember, we're all in this together, and not everybody has been vaccinated. And as I said, there are still about 1,500 cases yesterday in Los Angeles County, just under 100 deaths. So people are still getting sick. They're still getting hospitalized. Right now, we have about 2,700 people in hospitals in Los Angeles County right now. So this has not gone away. And that's terrific that some people have been vaccinated. And I'm really looking forward to everybody being vaccinated. But until then, we need to help each other out.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out how this helps each other out. Because if you have people that have been fully vaccinated and waiting the time, getting together, I understand there's a small theoretical chance that they pass it among themselves and out, but I guess statistically, what degree of risk are we talking about?
So the issue, Larry, is not that little group when it gets together. It's that little group then each goes back to their homes, and in those homes, not everybody's necessarily vaccinated. And then they go to the store. Not everybody in the store that they might interact with is necessarily vaccinated. And so it's not that there's transmission within that little group and it just stays in the group. It's just that those people who got together in that group then disperse back to their homes and their families and other individuals and their places of work. So we want to do what we can to stop transmission in the community as a whole. And so following your local public county guidelines for doing that is probably the best way to do that and help each other out.
So just to clarify, so the idea would be Barbara, let's say Barbara doesn't know that she's carrying the virus on her. She's fully vaccinated. She's not going to get sick from it, but somehow it's in her nostrils. And somehow if she's not wearing a mask, the virus comes out of her nostrils, let's say, and is picked up by her friend who's in that unmasked gathering, her friend who's been double vaccinated and gone more than 2 weeks. So then that friend takes the virus in her nostrils, goes home, her college-age son who's living at the house, then somehow gets what's released from her friend's nostrils, and the college-age son gets sick. Is that the what you're talking about?
Exactly, Larry. Or the friend's partner gets sick, or a coworker gets sick. So that's exactly right, because not everybody will have been vaccinated and protected against disease. And because while there's some evidence, particularly with the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is not available in the United States, that it does prevent infection and transmission, we don't know that completely for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So we need to still act like it's possible and to do that masking and distancing, the hand washing and the other steps.
At what point do you think we'll have a sense of this? Because I would think we'd start, if this is more than just theoretical and we actually do see the spread from those who are vaccinated to unvaccinated, when might we see evidence that infectiousness is occurring and start to see some studies on that?
So we're actually already starting to see them. So as I mentioned, there are now data for the AstraZeneca vaccine. So they have been looking at that, and they've been looking at it from the start of the trials. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines for initial trials, they did not look at that, but they are now. So I think within the next 2 months, we'll have a very good handle on this, but we do need to get the data.
All right, Barbara, thank you so much. Lisa in Claremont, you're on with Dr. Timothy Brewer, UCLA School of Public Health.
Yes, I have a question. My daughter had coronavirus back in October, and she's an adult living in Hollywood, and she has been donating her platelets and plasma as often as she can, because they call her and let her know when it's time to come back in. And I was really happy about it at first, but now I'm getting a little nervous because she goes, you know, she's done it several times, and I worry about her getting sick from giving so much. But I'm sure it's fine, but I'd like to be reassured.
Well, and you said she's had COVID, right?
Yeah, she had COVID, I think, in October, and she's been donating her platelets and plasma for the other patients.
Yeah, yeah. Lisa, thanks very much. Does that make her more susceptible to getting COVID again, Dr. Brewer?
No, not at all, Lisa. And actually, your daughter's doing a tremendous service for the community. So convalescent plasma has been a very important product for us to study, to understand its role in trying to protect people from getting serious disease. So the fact that people like your daughter, who have been willing to donate plasma after recovering from COVID-19, has been very important for helping us to advance the science and learn about how best to care for patients with this terrible disease. So it's really terrific that she's been doing this, but it does not put her at any increased risk for disease at all. And it's a wonderful community service.
All right. Thank you so much, Lisa. And thank you to your daughter as well. You can post your comment, your question for Dr. Brewer at the AirTalk Facebook page, or by tweeting at AirTalk. You can also call us at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Noni in the Hollywood Hills said, I had the Moderna vaccine. About 7-8 days later, I had a red mark, like an infection, around the injection area. It was really hot. It didn't hurt, but was uncomfortable. Should I expect a similar reaction with my second shot?
So Mona, the answer is yes, possibly. We're starting to see this, and it's a very interesting reaction. It's not an infection in the sense that we don't think it's cellulitis, skin infection, but if you should always let your healthcare provider know about the reaction just to make sure. It does seem to be some kind of an allergic-like reaction. I've now seen several patients where it's gone on for up to 2 weeks. It seems to resolve without any kind of treatment at all, but exactly what's going on there, we're not quite sure, but we think it is an immune-mediated response, not an actual infection.
Dr. Brewer, right before we went on the air, I saw a New York Times update that the Food and Drug Administration has told the pharmaceutical companies that they will not have to go through the same kind of rigorous phase trials of any booster shots to take on variants of COVID-19 with future formulations of the vaccine. Your thoughts about allowing the boosters to come into use more quickly without that degree of testing?
So that's actually what we do already, Larry, with influenza vaccine. So every year we study the circulating influenza viruses, and the vaccines are modified as necessary to make sure that they have the best fit for the circulating influenza viruses. So it's actually just following a protocol that we've used for decades and does not add any major concerns about safety or efficacy for the coronavirus vaccines.
Excuse me, Linda in Pasadena says she's scheduled for an ultrasound for her breasts around the time she's scheduled to get her COVID-19 vaccine, wondering if she should wait or if there's any problem with them being held around the same time.
So Linda, the only problem, and again, this is something we've learned as we've been vaccinating people, is that the vaccine can cause swollen lymph glands. We call it lymphadenopathy, and that can occur in the area of the armpit or axilla. And so sometimes when you get a breast ultrasound, they will see those enlarged lymph nodes and they'll worry about them and they'll say, uh-oh, we need to follow up on this or refer you to another test. And it's actually just all a reaction from the vaccine, and it will go away, but it can take several weeks for those lymph nodes to get to normal. I think most radiologists are now becoming aware of that. But let them know if you've received the vaccine, especially if they say, gee, we see some swollen glands on the side that you got the vaccine.
You know, one of the real concerns that health professionals are looking at are people delaying diagnostics that they would typically do on a regular basis, some cases annually or other times. Not, for example, I every year have a skin check just to see if I have any sort of potential skin cancer. And I've put that off because of COVID-19 and not wanting to go into a doctor's office if I can put that off. And I'm sure many of our listeners are in similar circumstances. But you know, maybe it's even more pressing than that, something that you have a history, say, of breast cancer, and it's really important that you have the mammogram. So what do you recommend to people when it comes to those tests and balancing possible exposure to the virus versus having those done?
So in general, if you have any concerns, you should talk with your healthcare provider. I think one of the things we are trying to do is get as close back to normal as we can and take steps in our clinics and our hospitals to protect people and staff when people come in for these kinds of checkups, because we recognize that they are essential for health. So I've now had my teeth cleaned again, which I had put off for a long time, and I was very impressed with the number of steps that the dental hygienists and the dentists are taking to protect themselves and to protect me. So any concerns, talk to your healthcare provider, but in general, you should be getting those recommended health screening tests if at all possible.
All right, very good. Also wanted to ask you about Six Flags Magic Mountain, saying it's targeting a spring reopening, but they haven't given many details, and obviously there'll be many protocols and layers of rules that they're going to have to follow if they do get the okay to open in the spring. But do you think that that's a realistic target for the theme park?
I think if we continue to move in the direction we're moving, that's highly probable. Again, it's going to be up to the county public health department and the state public health department to say when that's okay. But if they say it's okay, we know that Disney World in Florida has been operating for a while, and they've taken another number of steps to minimize transmission. The advantage of a place like Six Flags is it's all outdoors, and we know that outdoor transmission is much less common than indoor transmission. So I think if the county and state think it's okay, go for it.
Dr. Brewer, such a pleasure. Thank you, sir, for joining us again on Air Talk. We'll look forward to speaking with you again in just a few days.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. From the Fielding School of Public Health at UCLA, Dr. Timothy Brewer joining us on Air Talk. Reminder that every day we bring you another notable expert on COVID-19 to answer your questions. Coming up this afternoon at 3 o'clock, we'll have live coverage from NPR of President Biden's national address when he talks about the rapidly approaching 500,000 American lives lost to COVID-19 number, a staggering loss of American lives. We're getting close to it. We're just a few thousand away. But there is good news, and we've talked about that over the course of the first 40 minutes on Air Talk. Coming up, we'll talk about what's happened to Boeing, a corporation that's certainly lost its mojo in the wake of another terrifying incident on Saturday.